Thanks, thank you very much.
So after wishing everyone Boker Tov, good morning. We're looking at Daf Kuf Vav Amud Aleph, counting down three lines from the top. What we saw so far on Kuf Hey Amud Beis is a stira, a contradiction between the Mishnah and the Braisa. And the Gemara made an attempt to reconcile this contradiction in the following ways. Number one, with regard to Korea Almeso, the Braisa says that you're chayav. And the Gemara interprets that to mean that this Kriya is considered a Mesaken rather than a Mekalkel. So even though Mekalkel as a general rule is Potur, and Korea here, he rips his garment so he is destructive, but nevertheless, the Bryce insists that in this case of Korea Meso, he is Chayav, and that's called a Mesaken. The Mishnah, on the other hand, says explicitly that Korel Meso is Potter. And the Gemara tries to reconcile that by saying that the Mishnah is talking about a Korel Al Meso, which is pure Kilkul and has no element of Tikkun to it. Now, how do we construct a Tikkun and how do we say, no, it's pure Kilkul? So the Gemara says, depends what the word Meso means. If Meso means one of the Zion Krovim, then the Kriya is a Kiyum HaMitzvah, and the Kiyum HaMitzvah makes it into a Mesaken. We'll soon see later that an Avera can make something from a Tikkun into a Kilkul, but that's we're not up to that yet. So as far as Korel Meso in the Braisa, we're talking about one of the Zion Krovim, there's a Kiyum Mitzvahs Kriya, and when he's Korea to fulfill his obligation of Kriya, that itself is considered a Tikkun, and therefore he's Chayav. And we mentioned that there's a paradox here, that on the one hand he's Chayav for Chol Shabbos, on the other hand he was Mekayev his Mitzvah of Kriya. That's a different discussion. The Mishnah, on the other hand, is not talking about one of his Zayin Krovin. It might be one of his relatives, and he might have a halachic relationship with his cousin in such a way, Harvey, there's a sifu that he has to bury the dead, but he's not chayv in kriya. So therefore, when he is korea al meso in the broader sense, meaning one of his vita krovim, we said a faraway karov, in that case he doesn't have a mitzvah of kriya and therefore remains kilkul. Then the Gemara went on to reconcile the contradiction regarding Korea Michamoso. He rips his garment in a state of anger. The Braisa says he's Chayav, the Mishnah says he's Potter. The Gemara says that this depends on the machlokas between Rav Shimon and Rav Yehuda regarding Malacha Sheinatzricha Legufa. So we spent a lot of time yesterday in Shia trying to work out the interdependence between the machlokas regarding Malach Shein Tzricha Legufa and the issue as to whether Korea Mechamoso is considered a tikkun or a kilkul. We'll just summarize that long discussion that we had, in which we got very excited. We were jumping around over here like a Mexican bean. And we'll summarize it just in a few quick sentences. And that is that how and when can I convert a Korea Michamoso into a Tikkun? And the answer is, even though vis-a-vis the Beged, it's certainly a Kilkul, but vis-a-vis the person on a psychological level, insofar as he vents his anger, that's considered a Tikkun. And that leads us to the question, what is considered Litzorech as far as Malach is concerned? Do we have to validate the Litzorech based on Mishkan, or no? Subjective Litzorech is sufficient. And therefore, based on the Mishkan, Reb Shimon is right. Korea Michamoso is certainly not a Meleches Tikkun. It's a Meleches Kilkul, because the tzorach here of venting his anger is not something that's built into the definition of Meleches Korea, because the tzorach of Meleches Korea, indeed the tachlis of Meleches Korea, is to prepare for tfira. And that makes it into a Tikkun. So sometimes we have to rip apart stitches which are zigzagged in order to recreate stitches that are straight. And for the benefit of the garment, we do kriya as a preliminary stage. That's called a tikkun, and that's what Meleches Korea is all about, as defined by the paradigm of Korea and the Mishkan, where they prepare the arios. That, according to Reb Shimon, is a melacha tzricha legufa. That recognizes the broader, the tzorach that's inherent in the Mishkan, in the way the melacha was done in the Mishkan. However, Reb Shimon is not willing to validate a tzorach which is subjective and is not related to the tachlis for which the malacha was done in the Mishkan. But who is willing to recognize? Hi, David. See if you could bring in a chair. If I can trouble you, there's some extra chairs here. Great, excellent. And David, we have a makom for you right here up front. I don't bite. And the definition of Malacha Shein Tzricha Legufa of Rabbi Yehuda allows for a broader definition of Litzorech. What is that broader definition of Litzorech that Rabbi Yehuda validates? That's the subjective need of the person. Correct? The subjective need of the person. And therefore, even if I dig a hole and I have no interest in planting, the way they dug a hole back in the Mishkan to plant for the arios, nevertheless, says Rabbi Yehuda, I'm chayav insofar as I have a tzorach for that malacha, for that maisa malacha, as we called it. If I can check off that box, that requirement of a tzorach for the maisa malacha, I need to dig this hole in the ground for whatever purpose. That itself, says Rabbi Yehuda, is valid, and that's called the litzorach. So we have Rabbi Shimon's very narrow and strict definition of litzorach, which is validated by Mishkan, and then we have Rabbi Yehuda's broader definition of Litzorech, which is validated by my subjective need, my goal, my benefit, my purpose, and that's going to impact on the case of Korea Mechamoso. In the case of Rabbi Shimon, Korea Mechamoso, if you're talking about the Tzorech of venting your anger, we're going to have to go back to the Mishkan. We won't find that Tzorech in the Mishkan. They did not rip garments in the Mishkan for the sake of venting their anger, to our great surprise, but rather they ripped garments in order to prepare for a better, a more improved Tfira, to replace the old zigzag Tfira. And therefore, Rav Shimon says that despite the fact that his kriya is venting his anger, nevertheless, that's not a litzorech that's validated according to the halacha, and he's potur. It remains a makalkel, because if, insofar as I don't validate that tzorech, then I look at the action itself, and it is destructive rather than constructive, makalkel is potur. And the Gemara now wants to say, but not so according to Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda has the broader definition of Litzorach, in which we can validate a person's ultimate goal, his benefit, by the fact that subjectively he wants to vent out his anger in this case. He digs a hole because he needs the dirt elsewhere. He takes the mess out of a Rishus HaYachid. He doesn't care where it lands in any makom. He doesn't need a makom esuyam, but he has to get it out of Rishus HaYachid. And therefore he has a tzorach for the malacha per se, meaning the maisa malacha. That, Rabbi Yehuda, is enough. If the Torah, the halacha, recognizes your particular subjective tzorach, then the Gemara says that if he vents his anger by ripping a garment, insofar as his tzorach is for ripping the garment, he gets benefit from ripping the garment, the halacha will validate that tzorach, and therefore that makes it from a kilkul into a mesakin. That's more or less what we're doing until now. Now, the only debt that I owe you, actually I owe you two debts on Kuf Hei Omid Beis before we go on to today's topic, which is an extension of yesterday's, and that's Kuf Vav Omid Aleph. I owe you two debts. Here are the two debts that I owe you. Debt number one is, would Rabbi Yehuda actually validate that tzorech to rip your garment in order to vent your anger? And even though from Rabbi Yehuda's perspective you might say that's a tikkun, because instead of raising the building to the ground, he gets away with ripping a garment. But nevertheless, that tikkun is very, very doubtful. Why? Because it's unethical. What do I mean it's unethical? It's baltashkes, exactly. And that's the pasuk we read just 2 days ago, the last parsha that we read. Baltashkes, the Rambam says, applies whenever you destroy an object, even for the sake of venting your anger. It still comes under baltashkes. And the Gemara assumes that if his venting of his anger is his subjective need, but it contradicts, it violates the requirement of the Torah is our source for ethics, then by definition the avera involved in ripping his garment undermines the tikkun of this maisa. So just like we said in the case of Koreal Meso, the Kiyuma Mitzvah converts or upgrades a kilkul into a tikkun, the opposite is true. That which is inherently would be considered a tikkun, namely according to Rabbi Yehuda's broader definition of Litzoreh, becomes a kilkul because of the avera. Do you see that? That was what we got very excited about yesterday. Okay, fine.
Doesn't make a difference though, really, because he did the masa.
But even according to Rabbi Yehuda, when you do a maisa, the maisa can only be considered a tikkun if there's a tzorech. And you and I might say, well, I have a tzorech, that's enough. And the sugya establishes that that's not enough. Meaning that even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that not every tzorech is valid. We have to go through a system of validation. It's like when you come in with your passport, they have to make sure your passport is valid and you come into a country, right? So we have to validate your tzorech. And what barometer will determine whether we can validate your tzorech or not? It's whether or not it's halachically permissible. If it's permissible, and how much more so if it's a kiyuma mitzvah, like in the case of Korea al Meso, then we can validate your tzorech. And even though it's not the tzorech of Mishkan, nevertheless, the kiyuma mitzvah makes it into a tzorech. In the case of venting his anger, insofar as that's antithetical to the Torah law, it cannot be validated as its own. That's one debt that I owe you. A whole discussion here in the sugya, which we're not going to learn today, about Makalkel in the case of someone who violates the Iser of Baltashkes.
Wait, just one second.
I don't want to lose my trend of thought here. And what is the second debt I owe you? The second debt I owe you is the following. Remember, we called it Hakofa Aleph and Hakofa Bet. Hakofa Aleph was Meso al Meso, and Hakofa Bet was Chamos al Chamos. Here's what I owe you. Now that the Gemara has reconciled Chamos al Chamos by introducing the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon about Malach Hashem and Tzricha Legufa, can we now drop the ball on our Hakofa Aleph, in which we reconcile the contradiction regarding Meso by introducing Meis Di Dei and Meis Di Alma? Is there a Kiva Mitzvah? Is there not a Kiva Mitzvah? Leave that all out. All I need now to justify the Brisa and reconcile the stira between the Brisa and the Mishnah regarding Meso is to introduce Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimon. Once I have Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimon, I can now replace the entire first part of the sugya and just put it in deep freeze. The Gemara only used it lechatchila in the first round because the Gemara didn't want to enter into a machlokes tanoim. The Gemara was looking desperately for the possibility that both the Brisa and the Mishnah reflects one sheet of the tanoim. Now that we got to the second contradiction about Chamos al Chamos, and we had no option, we could not find the reconciliation according to one Tana, we therefore had to introduce two different Tanoim, and a controversy between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Now, I can go back to the first part of this Brisa and this Mishnah, namely Meso al Meso, and I can reconcile that contradiction by introducing Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. That's a debt that I owe. So David, you may be a little bit lost here, but don't be frustrated, okay? We've been working on this for a few days now. But we're starting something new in about, as soon as we can answer all the questions and see if we can suffer all the slings, we can suffer all the slings and arrows of those who want to throw rotten apples and tomatoes at me. But after we finish that, then we're going to start a new piece, okay then?
I'll get the right book.
Okay, great. Which book did you bring?
I brought the first one.
Oh, so we're going to be learning, David. I don't want there to be any misunderstanding.
Correct.
So
13.
No. No, not at all.
Next,
we're learning selected sugyas in Masechta Shabbos. We're going to be jumping around.
So what's the next one?
Oh, I can't even think that far.
What are you going to do today?
This one, we're doing the
slings and
arrows. Kufhei, 105.
Kufhei.
Okay, we're going to start 106.
Yes.
Well, no, no, no.
Damn it, just use that.
This is Kufhei on one side.
Oh, it's on the back.
And
Kufhei
on the other. Yeah, okay. Very clever. Yeah.
So Mishnah is Rav Shimon.
And the Mishnah is Rav Shimon.
Good.
Sure.
About the,
and then done. You just Shmuel was angry and then Manny.
Manny, about Rabbi Yehuda, I thought that I was going back to the way you said it, the video principle. That according to Rabbi Yehuda, he is much less concerned, if at all, with the mental apparatus, what the guy is thinking. He just said,
right. So Shmuel, I made a big deal about this yesterday. I want to emphasize this point so we don't miss it. Rabbi Yehuda does not reject the litzorech concept. Remember, our magic word yesterday for the shiur was litzorech, and that was up on the neon lights on the big board. Litzorech is universally accepted. Even Rabbi Yehuda accepts the concept of litzorech. Just Rabbi Yehuda doesn't need what's called gufa. What is gufa? Rabbi Shimon requires litzorech gufa. Rabbi Yehuda has a different definition of litzorech. Rabbi Shimon's definition of litzorech, let's start with that, gufa, means gufa the way the malacha was done in its paradigmic state, which refers to what?
Mishkan.
Everybody, Mishkan. That's another key word that we have to have on it. However, Rabbi Yehuda also requires litzorech. There's no such thing as a malacha that's not litzorech. In Rabbi Yehuda's frame of reference, Rabbi Yehuda is insisting that I have a broader definition of litzorech. I don't require gufa, meaning the way it was done paradigmically in the Mishkan. Right? Yirmiyahu said it very beautifully yesterday. You know, when we had a little chazara. But rather, all I require is your subjective litzorech. The Gemara thinks that even Rabbi Yehuda's requirement of litzorech, which is totally subjective, even that has to pass a barometer test. Even that has to pass some sort of a validation. And what's that? It's correct. It has to be permissible. It cannot be objection.
I have a big problem with that.
Okay, so that many is the part of the sugya that, as I said, is a debt. Mm-hmm. I don't want to spend too much time on that now. I'll tell you why, because once we get into that sugya, mm-hmm. we're completely derailed, so to speak, from today's program. So I have, believe it or not, I have a curriculum, not for the course, but just for the day. So David has asked me what's the next sugya. I don't know. You know,
can I just ask one question?
Yeah, please. Yeah. But again, I might not be able to answer it to you now until we get to that.
Danny gets relief from doing it, even though it comes through an error. You can't legislate that. It happens automatically. It's an automatic.
No. The halacha is going to go through cases in the Tanoim and Amoraim that they had to discipline themselves and not rip garments. It's unbelievable. You and I would say, well, I could plead insanity, right? You know, in French law, for example, you know, everybody pleads insanity, especially Arabs that kill Jews, right? So that's insanity, right? We plead insanity. But in halacha, it's very hard to, I don't even know. There is such a thing as insanity in Hilchus Gittin, you know, if somebody gives
anger, it's not insanity, everyone gets angry.
No, but I'm saying the response to anger has to be disciplined. It has to be controlled. Okay, Rabbi, so that's for Ashkafashir.
Okay,
so that's what I give on Sundays and Tuesdays is 11, but I haven't been able to. Yeah. Okay, then, Rabbi, yeah. Don,
I'm sorry. Just go back.
Again, Don, you weren't here yesterday, so,
I'm trying to, but I was here Thursday and the week before.
So see if you can, fill in the gap from yesterday. You know, that's the question.
No, the only thing is the last thing he said. So if you said you can introduce or you can't introduce the two Rebbeim into the distinguish between the Mishnah and the Baraisa.
So it depends. It depends. There's no clear cut answer to your question.
I thought Rabbi Shimon was the Baraisa rabbi.
If Don, you're dealing with Hakofa Aleph, which means to reconcile the issue of Meso al Meso, I don't have to introduce any controversy. I don't have to mention Rav Shimon's name. I don't have to mention Rav Yehuda's name. I can just describe two different kinds of Mesos and whether there's a Kiyum or not a Kiyum, and so forth and so on. But when I get to Chamos al Chamos, which is Hakofa Bet, that's the safer this price, the Brisa / Mishnah, now I'm in trouble. Because at this point, the Gemara was unsuccessful in its attempt to find one single Tana that could reconcile the Brisa and the Mishnah. Now that the Gemara's back is against the wall, and the Gemara Kaviyochel is forced, is compelled to introduce a machlokas, now the question is, can we go back to square one, meaning back to Hakofa Aleph, and reconcile the contradiction regarding Meso by saying that the Mishnah is authored by and reflects the Shita of Rav Shimon, whereas the Braisa reflects the Shita of Rav Yehuda? So that's a debt that I owe you, Emirz Hashem, maybe even today I'll pay it up, I don't know. Alright, now we're looking on Daf Kuf Vav Amud Aleph. Again, it looks a little strange on your photocopy because lo and behold, it appears on the back of your page, and usually Amud Aleph appears in the front of your page. But that's what happens when you try to save paper, exactly, and save the environment. We'll blame it on ecology. On Baltash. Okay. So now, Rabosa, again, if you'll be with me on a regular basis, I'm going to try to encourage you, and maybe we could even do it as a group effort to order Gemara's Masechta Shabbos. Manny, maybe you'll give us a break because you know we get a little reduction in the price here. But no, but seriously, I was just joking.
I'll call the story. I don't have anything shaykh with the story anymore.
Oh, you're not with the story. Okay, fine.
Oh, really?
Fine. I didn't know that, Manny. So scratch that that request.
But I could call for you.
But really, if we can all have a Gemara Shabbos, that would save us a lot of hassle. Tzvi has been very helpful with the archives in the meantime, but, you know, there's no need to on a daily basis, you know, ask myself, you know, Tzvi, did you give out the photocopies on the Gemara Shabbos? Again, there'll be a lot of photocopies like the Tosus Rid, which are not published in the Gemara, so I don't have a choice.
I have the art book. Can I bring all three volumes and leave them here someplace?
Sure. I mean, they'll be stolen in about 5 minutes. No, I'm just joking. Yeah, sure.
That was the basis of my question.
Right. But, you know, we'll find a place. I don't know if it'll be on the lock and key.
Three volumes back and forth.
But look, Don, here's the good news. You see that computer there? Which is worth about 5 cents. But anyway, that I left this here yesterday. Nobody stole it. So I, you know, 24 hours
it's passed. Worth 5 cents.
Right, exactly. But you didn't know that. Okay, fine. So we're three lines down from the top, and we're going back to the Mishnah, V'chol HaMakalkel in Peturin. Now, the Mishnah gives us a klal, which seems to apply when you read the word kol to what?
Everything.
Everything. What's everything in this case, Don?
The kal.
Because everything is a pronoun, and we hate pronouns.
So, no,
that's not what everything means.
Any
one of the... how many? What's the magic number? 39 malachs. Okay, so that's what seems to say in the Mishnah. And now, once again, we're going to find what I call a contradiction, a stira to the Mishnah, in a braisa. So in a sense, like, you know, the structure of what we saw in Kuf Hey is mirrored here on Kuf Vav. Tani Rabbi Avo. Now, just a little bit of history. What happens is that the Amoraim were constantly moving back and forth from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. You know, Bavel at that time was the center, the citadel of Torah learning, but there was still plenty of Torah going on in Eretz Yisrael. And although the Mishnayos, which were authored, of course, or edited, I should say, by Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, they were known all across the board, you know, whether in Bavel or in Eretz Yisrael, but the Braisos, which were left out of the Mishnah, sometimes they weren't known in respective areas, meaning the Babylonians weren't aware of necessarily a Braisa, and an Amora would come on his trip from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, and he would bring a Braisa. Now another introduction that I have to keep in mind, whenever an Amora brings a Braisa, it's always a little bit suspect. What do I mean? The very fact that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi omitted a Braisa, if it has something significant to say from the Mishnayos, that raises eyebrows, meaning, is the Braisa really reliable? It could be that there were various omissions or mistakes in the transmission, and that's why Rebbe deliberately omitted the Braisa. So again, as a general rule, we're going to assume, until we know otherwise, that the Braisa is reliable. But at the same time, we're going to be very critical in asking questions and raising doubts about the Braisa. And this is a classical structure of that sort, because Rabbi Avo came to Rabbi Yochanan on his way back from Eretz Yisrael, and Tani Rabbi Avo, Kami to Rabbi Yochanan, he quoted a Braisa in front of Rabbi Yochanan. And you'll soon see that Rabbi Yochanan was not very happy about this price. We are on line 4 from the top of Kuvav Amud Aleph. Okay, Harvey, it's on the flip side here. Line 4. What does it say in the Brice? The Brice says, Kol HaMakalchel in Peturim, so far so good. Chutz Michovel Umavir. There are two cases, both of which are Molochos on the list of 39. Where, according to the Brice of Rabbi Avo, Yochayev, despite the fact that what?
It's a kilkel.
That's a kilkel. So how many malachas do we have, Rabosai? 39. How many, what would be the magic number, according to the Brice of Rabbi Avo, of malachos which have a ptur of makalkalin?
37.
You have that? There are two malachas that we have to subtract from the list. One is called Mavir, the other is called Chovel. And these two malachos are not subject to the Ptur of Mekalkalin. So, Kol HaMekalkalin Pturim Chutz Michovel Umavir. Now, Rabosai, as soon as I say Chutz Michovel Umavir, what rational, logical question, the rational mind has to ask a question here?
Why those exceptions?
Exactly, why? Why should these two malachos be singled out as malachos where you're chayav, even though it's Mekalkalin? Now let's take the case of Mavir. It's a little bit easier. Does anybody want to try, just give me like a, shoot from the hip kind of knee-jerk response. Why would you think Mavir, which means lighting a fire, might be chayav, despite the fact that it's a kilkel?
Because you're burning something.
And what's the nature of burning something? By essential, by definition, it's destructive. You really have to... You have to add all sorts of conditions. Well, I need heat. It's very cold in the winter. I need to cook my food on a fire. You have to add different, hechitimtzes or kimtzes in order to justify that mavir became a tikkun and it's not a kilkul. But if I would isolate mavir in and of itself, and if that mavir is not a preliminary to any tikkun that's going to come later, then mavir, by its very definition, is a kilkel. The same kind of logic could apply to chovel. Now, what's chovel?
Injury.
Correct. Assault or physical injury, right? Now, you can implement chovel in the victim could be one of two categories. It could be a human being, it could be an animal. In both cases, it's called chovel. The classical Shas association of the word chovel is to be associated with what? If you divide Shas into six parts, as Rabbi Yehuda Nasi did, which of the six would be a classical chovel?
Nezikin.
Excellent. In fact, there's a perek in Masechet Bava Kama called HaChovel that deals with physical assault and the compensation that the chovel has to pay to the nechbal, to his victim. And that divides up into five different categories, which are called Nezik Tzar, Rifu, Shev, Sposim. We don't have to know anything about that. What we do have to know is that when you injure a person, by definition, that is destructive. That's the nature of the act. You're going to have to stand on your head and do somersaults in the air to come up with a chovel that's metaken. And I'll leave it for your imagination to try to come up with such scenarios. But I'm not going to engage in that discussion with you now. I'm just going to make one point. That chovel, like mavir, in its very nature, by its very essence, is a makalkel. And if the Torah says that you're chayav for mavir, if the Torah says that you're chayav for chovel, then the Torah is taking them out of the category of the ptur makalkel. So far, so good? Again, it's going to get much more sophisticated as we go along. This is just scratching the surface. Now, I have to add another very important point of it. We have not had the opportunity yet to introduce a concept that I've sort of been leaving deliberately outside the door. I haven't invited this concept in yet because this is already going for the big, how shall I say, somebody just won a lottery in America. I think it was $700 million or something. $580 million.
You're right, $780 million.
You're talking before, I'm talking before taxes, you're talking after taxes, right? Yeah. Anyway, the big lottery in Masech de Shabbos, which I'm leaving out because we don't know enough about it, is called Meleches Machsheves. Okay, again, if I had a blackboard, I would write Meleches Machsheves. And I'm not even going to try to translate those two words, Meleches Machsheves, because it's so complicated. I don't even begin to know how to scratch the surface. You have to know all of Masechta Shabbos. It's probably a three-year project to figure out what Meleches Machsheves is all about and how to define it. But let me say the following. Meleches Machsheves, in its most basic definition, which sets aside Shabbos in a very unique way, means that a malacha is not considered a malacha unless it's got a certain chashivas to it, a certain significance to it. Now, I don't know, we have some physicists here in the audience. Well, Yirmiyahu is not here, he has a PhD in physics, but he came yesterday, so we hope he'll be back. But if I would ask a physicist this question, I don't know if I get the answer that I want, because I'm not a physicist. But what's greater, a negative or a positive? Right, I guess in physics that's more complicated, positive. Right?
You're looking for positive, bro.
I would say positive, right? Because positive, you end up with something. But probably in physics, it's food packet. What? Right. Well, yeah. But that's also... Okay. So I would say the following. That if I want to get Meleches Machsheves in any particular action, what I want is something positive. You know, the world has been improved as a result of that malach. The malach contributed something to the world. For example, if you can't eat raw meat and then I cook the meat, I've contributed. Now you can eat the meat. If you need a roof over your head and I build a structure to protect you from the sun, I've contributed something. That positive feature, which is constructive and not destructive, that should be the essential definition of chashivus, that a malach on Shabbos has to have chashivus. The very moment that I tell you that Mekalkel is potter in Shabbos, again, certainly in 37 out of 39 cases, right? Mekalkel is potter in Shabbos. What I'm telling you is that malacha is not a malacha chashuva, meaning it's lacking, it's deficient in what? Meleches Machsheves. Then I go ahead and I tell you, but there are two malachos which are chayav, even though, despite the fact that Mekalkel, then what basically am I bracketing? What am I omitting? What requirement, what super rule am I getting rid of with regard to those two malachas? Meleches Machsheves. Now this is mind-boggling. What we're saying is that 37 out of 39 malachas have to fulfill the requirement of Meleches Machsheves. And therefore, Mekalkel is potter in 37 cases. But in two cases, Mavir and Chovel, what we're suggesting is the thesis that there is no requirement of Meleches Machsheves, which, number one, first and foremost means that what? You'll be chayiv in these two malachas, even if it's what? Help me out here. It's Mekalkel. But it goes way beyond that. Because what it means is that every other single requirement of Meleches Machsheves, and there are many, Meleches Machsheves subdivides into many branches, none of those branches should apply to those two malachas. Meaning, what I think the Gemara is telling us here about Mavir and Chovel is not just one specific point, namely that these malachas will be chayav despite the fact that it's Mekalkel. But the Gemara is telling us something much more fundamental. That the whole concept of Meleches Machsheves is irrelevant with regard to these two malachas. Which almost undermines my whole definition of malacha. Because malacha, by definition, has to be Meleches Machsheves. We're not just dealing with a prat, Mekalkel, we're dealing with a klal of Meleches Machsheves. The prat here is Megala on the klal. Which means that, for example, in the case of Mavir and Chovel, I should be chayv for Misasik. Again, we don't know what that means, but that's also a requirement of Melechus Machsheres. That means in Chovel, Mavir, I should be chayv even if it's a Dover Shein and Miskavin, which according to many Rishonim is a subcategory of Melechus Machsheres. It means I'm going to be chayv even if it's not a Melechus Umnus, which according to many Rishonim is a requirement of Melechus Machsheres. And it goes on and on. Dover Shein Miskavin. How can you tell me that a Dover Shein Miskavin is Chayav on Shabbos? It's not Melechus Machsheres. I didn't mean to do this Melacha. But it doesn't matter because Mavir and Chovel are not subject to the law of Melechus Machsheres. So again, we're not ready for this now, but I want you to give this a lot of thought during the morning. And how far is the Braisa of Rabbi Avo willing to go? Amale. So Rabbi Yochanan says, Puk Tani Livra. That's a very famous phrase in Shas, appears all over the place. It literally translates as pick it up and teach it outside, meaning don't let it go into our base Medrash. This Braisa
was right for editing it out.
Correct. It wasn't coincidental that this was omitted from the Mishnah. Now, if I want to formulate Rabbi Yochanan's statement as a halachic principle regarding Chovel Mazik, how would I formulate that? I'm sorry, Chovel Mavir, how would I formulate that? Again, if he's saying reject this brisa, so what's he saying in a positive way about Chovel Mazik? I'm sorry, Chovel Mavir. That Makalkal is going to be chad. He's going to be part. That you need
there are no exceptions, but we're back to 37.
And therefore, the Mishnah is correct in saying, "Call him a kalkul pturim." And when the Braisa sets up two exceptions to that rule, forget about the Braisa. You embrace the Mishnah. Call him a kalkul pturim. Makalkul is patur. It's not a malacha chashuva. Don't talk to me about exceptions to the rule. There are no exceptions to the rule. And therefore, Chovel Umavir would only be chayav according to Rabbi Yochanan if it was a Meleches Tikun, but not if it was a Meleches Mekalkel. But Rabbi Yochanan continues with a much more, shall I say, sympathetic tone. And he says, V'im Timtza Lomar Mishnah. And if you're going to tell me Mishnah means it was learned, this was taught, meaning that this Braisa is a valid Braisa, then Chovel Bitzorech Lekalbo Mavir Bitzorech Leafro. Now, Rabosai, I don't own a dog, so I don't know what is in a dog's diet. I just remember that when I was a kid, there were ads for Gainsburgers or something like that, so some sort of dog food. But if anybody here can tell me whether dogs drink blood or not, does anybody know? I don't know. Okay, let's just assume, because if they don't drink blood.
I was in Kenya and I saw people drink blood.
Oh, so if people drink blood, then maybe Cal Vachomer dogs drink blood. I don't know. Anyway, for some reason, this dog trainer or dog owner is feeding his dog blood. I can't tell you exactly why. We'll have to do some biological research on this and see.
Also, there's case in Gomorrah where they bleed people.
Right, that's to lower blood pressure. But I'm talking about feeding a dog blood. Okay, that's called tzorach lekalbo. He needs to feed his kelev blood. So he extracts blood for the purpose of feeding his dog blood. Okay, in such a case, according to Rabbi Yochanan, he would be chayev. It's not called Mekalkel. And then he goes on and he gives a case of Mavir, where he burned something. Why did he burn something? Bitzarech li'afro. Anybody know what Afer means?
Ashes.
Correct. He needs the ashes. Okay? It's interesting. In the menorah, in the Beis HaMikdash, they want to get rid of the ashes. But sometimes you need ashes. And
maybe it was Tisha B'av.
Maybe it was Tisha B'av, or maybe he needed ashes to heat up an egg, if the ashes are still, sometimes the ashes retain the heat, whatever it might be. So here, we have a sugya that presents the following thesis, that Rabbi Yochanan could accept this braisa, but only if you add two conditions respective to the two malachas that you talk about. In the case of Chovel, he needs it for his kelev. in the case of Mavir, he needs it for what? For his ash. So let's just summarize the machlokes between Rabbi Avo and Rabbi Yochanan. According to Rabbi Avo, in the case of Kovel Umavir Yochayev, even if what? Pure Makalkil. According to Rabbi Yochanan, you could be Chayev for Kovel Umavir, but only if there's some benefit that he's getting from the Kovel Umavir. Rabbi Yochanan gives us those two situations. And in order to shed some light on this machlokes, we're going to take a look at Rashi, Dibra Maschil Bitzarech. So you're counting down approximately 8 lines from the top of the page, on the right side of your page in Rashi. Rashi says, Bitzarech Lidam, he needs the dam, Hayotze Min HaChavola, that's coming out of this injury, Likalbo, for his dog. Okay, now take a deep breath. Ready for this, Rabosai? This is what you have to underline. The im mekalkel hu eitzel nechbal. How would you translate the word v'im? And if I'm asking you that, I don't mean I need a literal translation. That much I know. The im mekalkel hu eitzel nechbal. How would you translate v'im?
It's an exception.
Even if, correct, even if. Despite the fact that he is Mekalkel, this is phenomenal. Because now, even Rabbi Yochanan is admitting that this is called Kilkul. But that's Eitzel HaNechbal. As far as the victim is concerned, this is destructive. It's Kilkul. But nevertheless, says Rashi, Misakein hu Eitzel HaKelev. It's beneficial for the Kelev. Does anybody know what Rashi is trying to tell us over here?
It's an Avera of Tzar Bali Chaim.
Well, I don't know about Tzar Bali Chaim. Again, Manny, I'm not up to Tzar Bali Chaim. Now, don't derail me here. I just want to understand Rashi. This Rashi has nothing to do with Tzar Bali Chaim. So don't confuse me. I got enough on my plate here to figure out the Rashi without Tzar Bali Chaim. What is Rashi saying here?
Wait, where's the blood coming from?
The blood is coming from a human being or an animal that he injured, and he's literally collecting the blood in a pot, and he's going to feed the pot of blood to his dog.
Two different parts to this malacha, and we caught you. We know there's a second part, and that's the usher part that shows that it's usher by the normal pattern, and without that, Rabbi Yochanan wants to reestablish the usual rule.
So Rabosai, let me ask you this. Is Rashi implying a question? That's the general rule. Whenever Rashi says anything, he's bothered by something. Otherwise, he didn't. What's bothering Rashi?
Two parts. I thought it was very good.
Rashi wants to admit here that this is a Mekalkel. And yet at the same time, Rashi wants to say it's not a Mekalkel. You know, Rashi has a tough challenge to face here. On the one hand, this is a Mekalkel. And not only that, the Braisa says chutz, right? What does it mean chutz? The Braisa that we're dealing with, right? And Rabbi Yochanan is making an attempt to verify or validate this Braisa. It says chutz michovel mavir. Chutz michovel mavir means what?
Except that's not.
But where do you classify them, Don? If you're saying this is an exception to the rule, then what kind of rule is it that would apply to chovel mavir? No. You're missing my point. Kol amakalkel in pturim, chutz michovel umavir. If Rabbi Yochanan is going to validate, he's going to make a valiant attempt to validate that price, then he has to admit what about chovel umavir? That it is called makalkel. Do you see that? Because otherwise the word chutz makes no sense. Do you follow what I'm saying? It says, okay, kol amakalkel in pturim.
Right. Exactly.
Okay, but fill in the word except before you get to Chovel Amazir. Let's say you were a pedagogue teaching a class. Chutz, fill in a few words.
Except for these two things.
Except for these two, again, I'm not doing a good job here. Call Amakalkal and Pturim. Right? All Amakalkal and Pturim, Chutz. So what?
Except for these two Makalkalim.
Exactly. These two are Makalkalim. If Rabbi Yochanan is going to validate this Braisa, Rashi says, this is going to be, both these cases are going to come under the category of Makalkal. Well, now I have to rip the hair out of my head. Because if they are Mekalkel, so why am I Chayev? Meaning, Rabbi Avoh is the one who is willing to say, take Mavir, take Chovil, and remove them from the category of Meleches Machsheves, of the requirement of Tikkun, Sol Zayin Azoy, I'll grant you, it's pure Kilkul, and Yochayev, even though it's pure Kilkul. Rabbi Yochanan couldn't tolerate that. But on the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan is validating the Braisa. So if he's somehow salvaging the Lashon of the Braisa of Rabbi Avoh, he must admit that Chovel u'Mavir are cases of Mekalkel. Because otherwise the word Chutz makes no sense. Now, so if they are cases of Chovel u'Mavir, why don't you just embrace the Shita of Rabbi Avoh, the way he had the Braisa, and say that in the case of Chovel u'Mavir, Yechayev, even though it is a Mekalkel. But that can't be, because Rabbi Yochanan was one who was up in arms, and he rejected the possibility. The very notion was repulsive to him that you could have two malachas that don't require some sort of constructive thing. So Rashi says, yeah, it is Mekalkel, but it's not Mekalkel. No, how can you say it is Mekalkel and it's not Mekalkel? So Rashi came up with a brilliant thesis. This is what I call relativity. Right? It is Mekalkel relative to what? To the Nechma. But it's not Mekalkel relative to the Kelev. Again, I'm not saying I understand the Rashi. No, don't misunderstand me. Excellent. It sounds a lot like Rabbi Yehuda. Because Rabbi Yehuda had the broader definition of Litzorech and of what makes it into Metaken. Rabbi Yehuda was one who says that if you have some sort of subjective need, you're motivated to do this malacha exactly as it's done up on the screen. You're not doing it for what it was done in the Mishkan for some sort of constructive purpose. Let's say in the Mishkan they lit the fire so they could put the pot on the fire and then cook the dyes in the pot. But nevertheless, you do have some subjective need for this malacha. Why are you beating up this animal and squeezing his blood out? The answer is you got to feed the kelev. Why are you burning the fire here? Because you need the ashes. That's not why they burnt fire in the Mishkan. But it doesn't matter. So it sounds like Rabbi Yochanan is accepting the fact that Mekalkel is Patur. He's applying that rule universally to all 39 malachas, including Chovel u'Mavir, but he accepts Rabbi Yehuda, correct? He accepts Rabbi Yehuda, as Joseph said so well, and therefore if he's Chovel v'tzorech l'kalbo, or if he's Mavir v'tzorech l'afro, he's Chayev. Well, what question should you ask me now?
Is he
Pater Chayev? No, he's Chayev. I'm saying he's Chayev. Why is he Chayev? Because it's not Mekalkel. Why isn't it Mekalkel? Because even though he needs it for something that the Mishkan, they didn't need it.
But we just said it was Mekalkel.
So again, it's Mekalkel vis-a-vis the Nechbal. If you ask about the Nechbal, which Reb Shimon, if you remember Gufa, you remember the Gufa of Reb Shimon. Reb Shimon goes back to the Mishkan and he says, well, what's the Gufa? The Gufa was that I did this Malacha for a certain specific purpose. I had a goal in mind. From that perspective, insofar as we compare it, it doesn't size up to the Tzorech of the Mishkan. It is Mekalkel. And otherwise, Rabbi Yochanan could not possibly validate, in this very honest-to-goodness attempt to validate the Braisa, that says Chutz. So it is Mekalkel, but it's Mekalkel Eitzel HaNechbal. It's Mekalkel Eitzel HaEitz, you know, the tree that he burnt. But Rabbi Yochanan has a broader definition of how to convert and how to upgrade a Mekalkel to the level of a Mesaken. And the answer is, do you have a Tzorech? Your subjective need. Not the need of the Mishkan, the Gufa Shel Malacha, not the Tachlis as it was achieved in the Mishkan, but your personal Tachlis. And if you had your personal Tachlis, says Rabbi Yehuda, call it a Malacha Sheni Tzrich L'Gufa, but we recognize and we validate that Tachlis. As long as it's not anti-halachic. That's a different question. So that's your Tzar Malachayim issue. But let's assume there's no Tzar Malachayim. Memela, if you hold Rabbi Yochanan like Rabbi Yehuda, therefore we're going to say that this is called a Tikkun. Why is it a Mekalkel? It's a Mekalkel Eitzel HaNechbal. Why is it a Tikkun? Because I need it in order to feed my door. But I'm, Rabosi, I'm just repeating myself over and over again because I'm trying to, I never took dentistry, but I'm trying to pull a question out of you, you know. What question am I trying to pull out of you?
I don't think I got the right question, but I have a question.
Rav Shimon,
yeah. I'm having a certain problem here.
Yeah.
That I don't like the idea, excuse me, of Rabbi Abo being a Rav Shimon man. Why? Because until now you had me convinced that Kilkul and Tikkun are something different than Melacha She'ein Tzarech Legufa. Like Kilkul is a little bit bigger Kalal, and Melacha She'ein Tzarech Legufa, it could apply in different instances that don't relate to Kilkul.
So again, keep in mind, Shmuel, these are the facts on the ground. We had a steer between the Mishnah and the Brisa. The only way... Wait, okay, now you're talking. Well, again, the names I think are a little bit... Okay, fine. Keep in mind, we reconciled the contradiction of the Mishnah and the Brisa by saying that the Mishnah reflects the Shita of Shimon and the Brisa reflects the Shita of Yehud. That's what we established.
That's what we're doing now.
No, I'm just saying, that's what we did on Kufay, okay. Amid Bey. So that's what we have up till now. Rabbi Yochanan, on Daf Kufav Amid Aleph, is applying the rule of Rabbi Yehuda. Now, listen, my friends, I want to make this clear from the outset. If Rabbi Yochanan accepts the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, I got no problems with that. I have no proof to the contrary. I don't have any agenda to say that Rabbi Yochanan has to accept the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. If you want to tell me that Rabbi Yochanan is on board with Rabbi Yehuda, that Malach Shein Tzrich Leguf is Chayav, and we can validate your subjective tzorech, I'm okay with that. That doesn't bother me. But what should bother me, Rabbi Osai? I'm waiting for everybody to kind of
because
stand up.
Because you only have an exception to the two different things.
Yeah.
It's only, in other words, if I go ahead, God forbid, and I hurt an animal, and I have no tikkun, then it's going to be part of the regular category. It's such a limited case. And even that limited case has to have very specific criteria for it.
Well, what do you mean by case? You mean case of Mavir or case of Chovel?
Not every Mavir is...
Okay, that's fine. You know, again, Rabbi Yochanan is aware of the fact that it's a little bit of a push here. You know, this is what we call an Ukimta. You know, he's got to convince us that when it says Chovel and Mavir in this Mishnah, we're talking about this kind of Chovel, that case of Mavir. Okay, that's not smooth, and surely Rabbi Yochanan initially was not happy with that. You know, to say, oh, when this Brisa of Rabbi Avo said Chovel and Mavir meant this kind of Chovel, this case of Mavir, that for sure is not smooth. But I think you should be asking something much more fundamental here.
The basic from anything else.
Exactly. There's nothing in there. There's nothing unique about Chovel and Mavir. You're basically... It says, Kol HaMekalkel Pturim Chutz MiChovel and Mavir. What does that have to do with Chovel and Mavir? Every single case of Mekalkel, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if I have a need for it, and I'm going to go through every single Malach on the list of 39, it becomes a Malach HaShen Yitzrich HaLeguf and I'm Chayav. It's no longer Mekalkel because I have a need for it. So what's this Chutz MiChovel and Mavir? What do you mean Chovel and Mavir? Who needs Chovel and Mavir? He could have said Chutzmi Kol Tikun Kishaanam Tzarech Losa Domer. You know, so he gave an example of the Kelev and the dust and the ants. Well, what's he giving me examples for? The Brisa makes no sense as it is. The Brisa is saying something about Mekalkel, and he's telling you that Mavir and Chovel did not fit into this pattern called Kol HaMekalkel Pturim. Why not? Because he needs it. If he needs it, that's not called Mekalkel according to Rabbi Yehuda. So why are you giving me Chovel and Mavir? Forget about Chovel and Mavir. The whole discussion makes no sense.
So the last question is, why those particular things? Just as you said, just name those things that are Mekalkel.
I'll say even sharper then. I would say that Chovel and Mavir fit into the category of Kol HaMekalkel and Pturim. I.e., if you don't need it. I don't have a dog. I never owned a dog. I asked my father, may he rest in peace, every Pesach for the Afikoman for a dog, and I never got the dog. My father got the Afikoman, I never got the dog. So I don't own a dog. So if I don't own a dog, is Kol HaMekalkel Pturim. Don't tell me Chutz MiChovel.
Why not?
Because if I don't own a dog, then Chovel fits into the same pattern of every other Malacha. If I don't need Afer, then Mavir fits. You're not telling me. You want to tell me something about the nature of two Malachas. You have a bag, and the bag has 39 apples in it. You want to take two apples out of the bag. Why are you taking these two? These two apples belong to the bag. They are Mekalkel. And Rashi says it, that it's Mekalkel. No, Vos, but I need it for something else. I need it, so it's a mitaki for my kelev. I need it because I need the afer. I'm going to fry my egg in afer, whatever I'm doing. No, if that be the case, apply that rule to all 37 malachas. Don't just isolate two malachas. There's nothing unique about Chovel and Mavir. Chovel and Mavir belong to the category of Kol HaMekalkel and Pturin, just like the other 37, the balance of the malachas. You want to tell me he needs it? So tell me in every case of it, every single malacha, if he needs it. You know, he ripped his garment. No, call him a Kalkib too. Yeah, but he needs it because he wants to vent his anger. He ripped his garment and that's called Kilkul, but he needs it because he has a mitzvah of Kriyal Meso. And I can go through every single malacha. He erases two letters. No, that's destructive. He's pot. No, but he needs the parchment because he wants to get rid of those two letters and substitute them with another two letters. And I can go vita over and over and over again with every single malach. I could say it's kilkul, but then I can say, but I need it. And if I need it for whatever purpose, X, Y, or Z, that's called malach shein tzrich l'gufa. Rabbi Yehuda says yechayev. If Rabbi Yochanan is simply applying the principle of malach shein tzrich l'gufa chayev like Rabbi Yehuda, if Rabbi Yochanan embraces the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, then why did this braisa tell me chutz mi chovel u'mavir? Chovel u'mavir has nothing to do with it. Chovel u'mavir. So okay, in Chovel you need it for this. You can go through every single malach and say what you need it for. This is a pella. And for this Rabosa, we need the Tosus Rit. The only problem is that this is our biggest enemy because I don't want to go overtime. But I just want to know. I gave you the Tosus Rit yesterday.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah.
You have it. So that's good. That's, first of all, that if you have it, that itself is Revach. That's a great Revach Vatzol Yehuda. Okay, so you have the Tosus Rit. I worked hard to get this Tosus Rit. I had to use Bar Ilan. That's a lot of work. I'm just joking. Okay.
Rabbi Breza?
Yes.
The last thing you said, if you put it back into the Gemara, would it be correct to say, Zu Eino Mishnah, Rabbi Yochanan said to Rabbi Vau, the deen you said, I can't make sense out of it. It doesn't fit any of the normal patterns of Malacha.
Correct. That's certainly Rabbi Yochanan's original. Rabbi Yochanan's original position was: how can you possibly present the thesis that Chovel Mavir would be chayav even though they're makalkil? That's impossible. Every malacha requires tikkun. There's no such thing as a makalkil that you chayav for. So how can you tell me chutz mi Chovel Mavir? But then he becomes a sympathizer, and he said, "Look, if your brisa is indeed validated, you know, if we have to make some sense, salvage it. You know, what do they call it in sports, you know, when the ball goes into the dirt, you know, and you have to dig it up from the dirt, you know what I'm saying? You know, like the, I remember Tom Tresh, okay, I'm really, when the Yankees won the World Series. Anyway, he caught a ball that was literally in the dirt, but somehow the umpire said it was a fair catch. You know, that's okay. So yeah. If you want to dig up this brisa from the dirt, says Rabbi Yochanan, if you want to salvage this brisa and somehow validate it, then you're gonna have to tell me that the brisa is referring to a case where he needs the chovel or he needs the maf. So again, Rashi seems to indicate here that even in the case where he needs it for his dog or for his afer, whatever it is, nevertheless, it's called a makalkel. Why is he chayav? Even though it's makalkel, Rashi says, because it's a tikkun for what? For his dog, etc., etc. If it was lilolit sarchlal, if he had no need for it, then even chovel umavir would be potur, because that would be a pure kilkul. And in that sense, Rabbi Yochanan is really on board with Rabbi Avo, except that Rabbi Avo seems to take the opposite approach. So scratch that last sentence. Rabbi Avo seems to say no, that in Makalkel, excuse me, in Chovel and in Mavir, you're chayav even if it's pure kilkul. And then we're stuck with the following question: If Rabbi Yochanan is standing on the shoulders of Rabbi Yehuda, and he holds that Malach Shein Tzricha Leguf is Chayav, then Chovil Umavir are not exceptions to any rule. Adarabah, they are typical cases of the rule. Namely, the rule is that if you have a tzorech, that's called a Malach Shein Tzricha Leguf. You don't have the tzorech in the Mishka, but you have your own personal tzorech. Then in any malach of Shabbos, if you have a tzorch yechayev, and if that be the case, then why did the Brisa single out chovil umavir? So let's just summarize two questions, and I'll point out the Rashi to you in the Tosfos Rid, and then that's what we'll call it a morning for, as far as the Shia is concerned. The first question we want to understand is the following: how could Rabbi Yochanan interpret this Brisa as chovel v'tzorech lekalbo mavir v'tzorech laafro, when the Brisa says it explicitly that he's a mekalkel, call him a mekalkel p'turim chutz? And if your answer to that question is that it is a mekalkel, but it's really not a mekalkel, meaning it's a mekalkel insofar as the nechbal is concerned, but it's metakin as far as the kelev is concerned, then that leads us to question number two. Then you're activating the principle of Rabbi Yehuda of Malach Shein Tzricha Legufa, and there's nothing unique about these two malachas, but rather these are just two examples of a Malach Shein Tzricha Legufa, which is considered, according to Rabbi Yehuda, to be metakin and not makalka, because you have your subjective tzorech. Why did the Braisa therefore isolate these two malachas? Now, here are the Rashis that I want you to look at. First of all, we did the Rashi Dibra Maskel B'Tzorech. That was about eight lines down from the top. But we have two other very important Rashis on the page, and they happen to be a little bit higher up on the page. The first one is Chutz Mi Chovel. And here Rashi quotes a Mishnah. You'll see that three lines down from the top. Then we have Umavir, and if you go down six lines down from the top, once again Rashi quotes a Mishnah. So Rashi is what we call throwing around his bekiyas here. First, in the case of Chovel, he quotes a Mishnah in Bava Kama. That doesn't surprise us, that there should be a discussion about Chovel in Masechta of Bava Kama, the laws of damages. And then, in the case of Umavir, he quotes a Mishnah at the beginning of Masechta Shabbos. I'm sorry. Another Mishnah in Masechta Bava Kama, my mistake. And that Mishnah deals with a principle called Kim Lei B'Darabamine. Does everybody here know what that is, or should I review it? Okay, again, I can't write it on the blackboard because I don't have a blackboard.
Would you like a blackboard?
You have a whiteboard.
Yeah, I have this thing here. If somebody could organize it for me and get me the right chalk or whatever I need for it, that would be great help. Kim Levi the Rabbinay. You remember that, Harvey, from your younger days? Kim Levi the Rabbinay? What's Kim Levi the Rabbinay? When you have in one action that it generates two different punishments, then we mete out the higher punishment, the more harsh punishment, and we alleviate the lower punishment, the lighter punishment. So, for example, if a person does an action which would generate a chiyuv misa, he would be put to death, it's a capital crime, and at the same time, he has to pay monies or compensation, then he gets, they put him to death, he doesn't have to pay the compensation.
If he doesn't get to death.
Right. Well, it also applies in Malkus. Let's say, for example, a guy is chayuv 39 lashes, which again is last week's parsha, from 2 days ago. And he also, in the same action, incurred chiyuv mamon, which means compensation. He doesn't pay. He gets the malchus and he gets scot-free on the payment. That's called kim lebi the rabbi.
Even if he doesn't get the lashes, he doesn't pay on the money either.
Well, that's called chayve misa shogin. Is that what you're referring to? That's
no, I'm saying like the accusation is this. You're in the category of this, but you don't actually receive it.
Because for technical reasons, let's say. So that's the principle of Chizkel. That's called chayve misa shogin. But what I wanted to tell you, Don, this is very important. That if a man, the Mishnah tells us, if a man burns down his friend's haystack on Shabbos, he does not pay damages. What does that tell you? Why would he not pay damages? He deliberately burnt down his friend's haystack on Shabbos.
He's liable for death and Shabbat.
Exactly. He's liable for death for violating the Shabbos. Now the question is, wait a second. Burning down someone's haystack is a makalkel. and a mekalkel is not considered a malacha. So Rashi quotes this Mishnah to try to prove Rabbi Avo that in the case of Mavir, Yechayev, despite the fact that it's Mekalkin. Then Rashi has another Mishnah, which is three lines down from the top. Of Hachovel Bechaver B'Shabbos Potter. That if a person wounds his friend on Shabbos, he doesn't pay damages. And Rashi says, why doesn't he pay damages? Because he did it on Shabbos, and he incurs a capital punishment for the violation of Meleches Chovel. Now, this is again a pure kilkel. He's not feeding his dog. In the case of burning down his friend's haystack, he's not collecting the ashes. So what's going on over here? So Rashi says this proves Rabbi Avo's opinion, based on the brisa that Rabbi Avo was carrying from Eretz Yisrael, namely that Mavir and Chovel are two malachas where you're chayav on Shabbos, despite the fact that it's pure kilkel. So that's a fascinating pair of Rashis, and Rashi consistently wants to show you and prove to you that Rabbi Avo is correct. And the big question is going to be how Rabbi Yochanan is going to deal with those two Mishnayos. So that's food for thought. But more important for me for today is the Tosus Rid, because the Tosus Rid wants to claim that something entirely different is going on in this sugya. Now, if you have the photocopy of the Tosus Rid, you'll see on about line 7, I bolded the Imtim Salomar Mishnah. Now, I'm not telling you have to skip the first 7 lines, but for our purposes, we want to focus on line 7 for about the next, 10 to 12 lines after that, and that's the part that we want to see. Okay then, Rabbosai? So right now, I'd like you to break down